then said slowly, "Captain, the director has ordered us to abort the mission."
"I am aware of that," Krebs answered sharply. "I have decided to enter the ocean sooner than planned."
"Shouldn't we answer Dr. Wo?" O'Hara asked.
"How can we?" Krebs said. "We are beyond direct communications contact."
"But we're not..."
"We are beyond direct communications contact," Krebs repeated with iron in her voice. "We never received the abort command, so we cannot acknowledge it."
"She's going in," Grant marveled. "Despite the IAA's order, she's going ahead with the mission."
Zeb looked concerned, but kept silent. No use arguing with the decision she's already made, Grant told himself.
Krebs said to O'Hara, "Your communications duties are finished. Maintain an open comm channel for monitoring incoming messages only. We will not respond to any messages from the station."
Lane looked as conflicted as Grant felt. Worried about disobeying Dr. Wo, yet eager to go on with the mission.
"You will pilot the ship from now on, O'Hara, under my direct command, of course."
"Yes, Captain," Lane said almost in a whisper.
"Maintain dive angle of 30 degrees.
"Yes, Captain," Lane repeated as her hands busily rearranged the controls on her console touchscreens.
Grant looked to Mazarawa. Zeb seemed concerned, worried. Turning to look past O'Hara, Grant saw Carlstead look positively shocked. Worse, he looked frightened. But no one said a further word. Grant found that he was glad for Krebs' decision to defy orders. Joyous. It was obvious that Dr. Wo had been forced to send the recall command. "But we're here, below the clouds, heading into the ocean. We're going to do what we came here to do, and neither Wo nor the IAA nor the new morality can stop us." Grant grinned inwardly as he felt the ship's thrusters purring smoothly, propelling them through the thickening Jovian atmosphere down toward the world ocean. O'Hara finished resetting her console.
"Ready to take the con, Captain," she reported softly.
Krebs pushed down from her usual spot to stand beside O'Hara, hooking one foot into a floor loop. Pointing to the small screen in the upper left corner of O'Hara's console, Krebs said,
"Keep that one open for incoming communications. There is to be no outgoing message unless I specifically order it. Understood?"
"Understood."
Turning to Mazarawa, she said, "Prepare a data capsule for launch."
"Yes, Captain," Zeb replied.
Krebs leaned past O'Hara and touched the communications screen, then said in a flat, calm voice,
"Data Capsule 1, we have penetrated the clouds and are descending into the ocean. All systems functioning normally except communications, which are totally blocked by unexpected electrical interference in the Jovian atmosphere. Since we are unable to receive or transmit messages, we will continue on our mission plan and report through data capsules as necessary."
Then she turned to O'Hara and asked, "Did you get that recorded?"
"Recorded," Lane answered.
"The capsule is ready to be launched," Mazarawa announced.
"Good. Launch it."
Nothing happened.
Grant suddenly realized it was his job to launch the capsule. Too late. Krebs pulled her foot free of the floor loop and whirled halfway about, staring wildly.
"Archer!" she bellowed. "Archer, where are you?"
Blinking with surprise, Grant said,
"I'm right here, Captain."
Krebs advanced on him like a barbarian army.
"Why are you just standing there? Launch the capsule! Launch it!"
Yes, sir, Grant stuttered, desperately trying to remember the launch command sequence.
The capsules had to be launched manually, he recalled that much. They were not included in the biochip linkage. With fumbling hands, he tapped his central touchscreen and called up the launching program. It was simple enough, he saw, but with Krebs hovering over him like a smoldering volcano, it took Grant 2 tries before he got the commands in the right order. He felt the capsule's launch like a tingle of excitement shimmering through him. It reminded Grant of the thrill he had felt the first time he'd skied down an expert slope in the snowy Wasatch Mountains. Breathless, exhilarating. Until Krebs growled, "Wipe that stupid smile off your face, Archer, and get back to reality." It took an effort of will, but Grant did it. Hours passed. The ship still dove toward the sea. Krebs put different camera views from the sensors onto the big wall screen, but they showed nothing but blank, featureless mist, all gray, colorless. To Grant, it looked empty and dead. Until Muzarawa shouted, "Look at that!" "What?" "Let me increase the magnification," Zep mumbled, his fingers working the console. "There! See?" "Snow," Grant said. Soft, white flakes were sifting through the haze. It looked beautiful. Something like Earth, like home on this distant alien world. "Not snow," Karlstad said. "Organics. They form in the clouds and precipitate out." "Manna from heaven," said O'Hara. "Food," Karlstad corrected. Muzarawa chuckled. "It is only food, my friend, if there are creatures in the sea to eat it. Otherwise, it is merely organic snow." Grant thought of the distant, shadowy shapes that Dr. Wo had shown him from the record of the first mission. Life forms? As big as whole cities? Dozens of kilometers across? It seemed impossible. "Karlstad and Archer, rest period," said Krebs. "Disconnect, take a meal, and sleep for 4 hours." Grant had to consciously force his hand to switch off the linkage. Suddenly he was no longer connected to the ship. He was alone again inside his own flesh. Feeling a sullen resentment, he pulled the optical fibers from the chips in his legs and stowed them away, then floated off to the nutrient dispenser. Egon was already plugging the dispenser tube into the port in his neck. "The soup line," he said, as he turned on the dispenser's pump. Grant hooked up too. There was no satisfaction in eating this way. He never seemed to feel hungry, probably because the perfluorocarbon liquid kept his stomach filled. But there was no pleasure in eating either. No taste, no aroma. Karlstad broke into his thoughts. Leaning his head so close it almost touched Grant's, he whispered, "Did you notice the way she couldn't find you?" "What?" "When you were supposed to launch the data capsule. You were right in front of her, no more than 3 meters away, and she couldn't see you." Remembering, Grant said, "Yeah, that was spooky. She damn near panicked." Glancing over his shoulder to make certain Krebs wasn't watching them, Grant whispered, "She has a funny way of looking at me. At all of us. What do you think it is? Temporary spells of blindness, maybe. She's blind? Maybe, in flashes. Her vision blanks out for a moment or two. Is that possible?" Karlstad made a barely discernible shrug. "I don't know. I'll see if I can find anything in the ship's medical library." "Could the implants be affecting her vision?" "Could be. What's worse, though, is her defying old Woeful's abort order." The dispenser bell clunked. Karlstad yanked the feeding tube from his neck like a man pulling a leech off him. Grant said, "I'm with her on that. We shouldn't scrap this mission just because some IAA committee says so." Karlstad's brows rose. "You? The true believer? Now you're ready to commit heresy? It's got nothing to do with religion." "The hell it doesn't. Those IAA inspectors are probably all your new morality people, or the equivalent." "No matter what they want, I want to go on with the mission," Grant insisted. "Don't you?" "Certainly. But what happens when we get back to the station? How do you think those inspectors are going to treat us? Refusal to obey orders is called mutiny, you know." Grant's jaw dropped open. "Mutiny?" The timer bell went off. "Stop your